B-Pod Studios.
Now. Sports talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
A sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Where do you think the fan interest ranks right now? Do you think it's at, you know, with fans not being allowed in the ballpark and ratings down and a team that struggled, do you think that this is a low point since you've been here in terms of interest?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that it was a very, very difficult season. And when you have a difficult season and you don't perform at a high level, obviously fan interest wanes. So we're cognizant of that, and it's our job to do everything we can to be as competitive as possible so that interest level comes back. And, you know, we've got such incredible sports franchises in this town. And I think we're blessed that we can all root for each other and support each other. And it's been a magical era. And as long as the existing ownership groups stay intact, I think we're positioned for success as we go forward with all the teams as well.
Press conference yesterday at Fenway Park. That was Sam Kennedy with a question and answer there about fan interest sort of dying this year.
Relevant.
What did you make of that? That is the team president talking about fan interest.
Asked about his club, his ballpark, not having fans in it. Was there any questions about the other teams in this town? Okay. The problem I have was at the end of the answer. Because you're starting to sound like Larry Lucchino is what you shouldn't do. Because I like Sam Kennedy. He has to say what he has to say at times. And his hands are a little bit tied. Don't go getting all magical around here. Like, no, you finished one of the most atrocious, brutal seasons for a professional sports franchise in this city. You had to go back to 1965 to when they were this bad. This bad. And then you're trying to, this is what they do down there. They try to fool you as a fan of sports and prey on the success of others. Well, just remember, we're in a magical time around here with so other successful franchises around here. And yeah, we all got each other's back. Do you? Is that what you do when you drop at 1 o'clock on a football Sunday that you're firing the manager and then still have him around your club? Is that what you do? Is that how you have everybody's back? You sound like Larry Lucchino. Don't be better than that. You sit there next to Hein Bloom and the other guy, Brian, what's his name?
O'Halloran,
sorry. As I go on this little tidbit rant. It's about you. It's about your team this season and how you're going to fix it. Don't go trying to confuse people. Like, we're going to deflect here. We got the Celtics and the Bruins were just in the bubble and the Patriots. And we all got each other's back and everybody's for every. No, it's about you and America's ballpark, the most beloved one, and getting people back in the seats. You going to raise ticket prices? What are you going to do? You going to spend this offseason? People want to know. Are you going to be a contender again? You let the face of baseball go. You had him. You couldn't get a deal done. And you traded him and David Price to the Dodgers.
I thought for the first 20 seconds or so of that answer, he was completely accountable for the fact that his team sucks.
And then he got Lucchino. He tried to, we need to.
I mean, it's odd. It's an odd reference to the other teams. Here's what I think happened.
I was fine until I heard the whole thing.
I just think maybe, like we're all guilty of, in jobs where we talk all day.
Yeah.
We're guilty of not fully listening to things at times, and he heard the word rank in there, and I think he thought it was about where does your team sort of rank in the market. Yep.
Read Dan Shaughnessy today to see where they rank.
But what he was asking about was where does it rank in your time as an executive with the Red Sox, and he doesn't really get back to that in the question until a little later on in the question. So maybe he just was thinking ranking, like where do we rank here in Boston?
He's trying to help me. Help us get back.
I don't think he was trying to deflect, though. You know, fans, I mean, there's no deflecting this.
Fans like everybody. Magical. Do you feel magical? You wanted accountability yesterday. Where's the owner? Where's he been?
Oh, I can't. I haven't been to a game.
You wanted accountability for the baseball team. When J.D. Martinez last week tells you, well, there's a world pandemic going. It's very hard to concentrate and do your job. I want accountability. Don't go getting magical. There ain't nothing magical right now. Celtics and your team got popped. Yeah. Bruins, they got eliminated by the eventual champ. Goalie left town in a bubble. Patriots are trying to find their way right now. Ain't nothing magical right now. I'll be starting that. Don't be getting all historical. No, this is about 2020, and he didn't finish answering the question about getting his team's relevancy back as to what they were going to do. You want a plan. We're going to spend in the offseason. We're going to keep ticket prices the same. You know, yeah, tough year for fans. Well, we wanted 7,000 fans in the ballpark, but it just wasn't right.
Really?
Okay, thanks.
I thought that was a little weird.
I feel so much better about the team. Go ahead.
I thought it was weird that they revealed that. About the 7,000 fans, they gave a specific number.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of just dodging that conversation, saying, well, you know, we had hoped that maybe there was a chance, but it didn't end up working out, and that was all. We never really got too deep into that conversation.
September 30th?
Instead, he's like, yeah, we could add 7,000 fans. For what?
Yeah.
To come in there and boo your ass off the field?
You're thankful. You are thankful there are no fans.
A disgraceful team. What the hell did you want fans in there? Dan Shaughnessy's column today, by the way, did talk about the irrelevancy of the Red Sox here. And in Dan's opinion, he said COVID helped them. It helped them disappear. It helped them fly under the radar. Because had it been a full season of that, had there been fans in the ballpark, had there been tickets purchased in December and January for this disgrace on the field,
Merry Christmas.
It could have gotten ugly at the ballpark all year long. And instead, they get to duck that because they didn't have any fans in the park. This is interesting, though, as Shaughnessy wrote today. After finishing in last place exactly once in 79 seasons, from 1933 until 2011, the John Henry Red Sox have done it four times in 9 years. They've also won two World Series in that stretch,
right,
but this is sort of what you and I were talking about 3 weeks ago when I said, why is it that the peaks are great with John Henry? Listen,
right.
Four championships.
And you appreciate that. You do.
No one's been better as a Red Sox owner and more invested. The guy's invested hundreds of millions of dollars. He is invested in the team, and historically they've paid. Okay, they've had one of the highest payrolls in baseball historically before they started doing money dumping things like Mookie. But anyway, why do the Valleys have to be so dreadful?
I don't know. You were with...
I've been saying this all year.
You were with Felger and Mass.
Why do these Valleys have to be so bad?
You were with Felger and Maz on Radio Row that week when you had Bob Kraft on, Robert Kraft.
Ravens year?
Yeah.
When he talked about the Ravens?
Seattle Broncos? Loading up, or do you want to be a contender, be in the mix every year? And what was the answer he gave you? I want to be there every year. We want a chance every year. Instead of, we might not load up, but we want to be there. Red Sox don't want that.
Especially in baseball, it doesn't seem like... You know, it's so clear cut every single year. Like, well, obviously you're going to be there with this guy and this guy. No, you know, with a couple of injuries or a couple of pitchers that perform better than expected, you can stay in the mix. But Beto, you're right. Why do the Valleys have to be so unbelievably low?
That's not magical. There's nothing magical about that.
Well, I mean,
you're really caught up on that magical word. I love it.
No, that's what set me off was magical.
But do you remember, like, how bad we thought it was? Like, what was it, 09, when they got swept in the postseason? They lost, like, three straight and it was over. Like, oh, this is bad. No.
Is that the A's right here? No.
Who was it?
A's? I think the A's, right?
They lost in the division series to the Angels.
Angels. 09?
Yeah. 09.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we thought that was bad. We thought that was like a real disappointment. Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. Well, just wait a minute. Well, then we'll tell you what a real valley is. We'll tell you what a low point
is.
See,
when you disappear, and to Shaughnessy's article, when COVID makes you out of sight, out of mind, that sometimes can be worse because you're forgettable. Then you have to do something above and beyond to even get back on the map. Imagine if, you know, they announce, say, a couple of weeks from now, we're going to raise ticket prices without doing anything yet in the offseason. Oh, that's going to get people excited. That'll get them back. People still go ballpark. There'll be people that'll go. But you've fallen quite far since winning. And it wasn't that long ago that you won. 2 years. 2 years, top of the heap. best season ever.
Mm. Yeah.
How many wins? 100 and what?
108.
Woo!
108.
Woo!
And so if you don't count 2011, woo, they didn't finish in last place there, but they did the following year. But in the decade from 2011 until now, the last 10 years, they've also had five managers now, if you're counting Ron Renicki. I don't know that there's been that same stability that you had for a stretch when you had Terry Francona. So I just think there's, I don't know, there's something there about the Valley's being so damn bad for this team that they've got to get out of that rut. They've got to not allow that to continue to happen every few years,
yeah,
where you deal with this and last place finishes. 617-779-0985. There's also a new managerial name.
Oh.
Was it Jim or T-Bone that said thought this might appeal to me? This might be an appealing name for me.
Is he from UMass?
I don't know why me. I don't know why you singled me out.
Is he from UMass?
We'll get to that coming up next. A new name in the managerial search for the Boston Red Sox and your calls here on Zolak and Bertrand. Brad Stevens at 1250.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something.
You gotta wear your lucky jersey, don't wash the lucky socks,
rub your ball 16 times. Yep.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Yeah! Yeah!
This from Buster Olney on the Red Sox. He says the Red Sox would be crazy not to hire Alex Cora back. He said, let's cut to the bottom line. If the Red Sox honchos don't rehire Cora, if they actually pass on someone who led the franchise to its greatest season ever just 2 years ago, they are ludicrous.
Oh, it's better players.
He says they are ludicrous, absurd, and could potentially court disaster if they pick somebody else. What world am I living in?
Oh, 2020, pal.
That's true.
It's called 2020.
That's not a world any of us have picked. Oh, my God. The current circumstances don't really allow Bloom to publicly embrace the idea of rehiring Cora, who has a month left in his season-long suspension for the role he played in the Astros' sign-stealing of 2017. If Bloom were to throw a lot of bouquets in Cora's direction, the thought police in the commissioner's office, maybe even Commissioner Rob Manfred himself, would probably not respond too kindly. Wait, what? This is the commissioner's fault? Listen, I ripped that guy nonstop. I think Manfred's a bad commissioner. I think he sucks. What? This is Rob Manfred's problem?
No. Nope.
Oh, my God. So he's saying that a big problem would be that if they were to pick up the phone and call Cora today, they'd be violating the rules of Cora's suspension. To which I say, good, don't pick up the phone and don't call Cora. And don't put yourself behind the eight ball because you've waited to sit around and see what Cora's up to.
Are we the only anti-Cora show in this entire city?
I don't know.
Not anti-Cora, but been there, done that. Right, Hardy? I mean, there's dirt there.
Don't wait on Cora. There are going to be guys available ready for interviews next week.
Right. I don't know that any of them's a better manager than Cora, but I don't know how good a manager Cora is either, because it seems like he's a pathological cheater. It seems like he cheats when he manages or he's involved with baseball teams, because they did it in Houston, and I'm pretty sure they were doing it with the Red Sox, and that's...
JT Watkins, rogue employee.
I mean... You can't do that. And I know everybody points to the Patriots and all the allegations. There's something really bad about what happened in Houston, to the point where Major League Baseball singled out a couple of guys and banned them from the game for a year and said, you can't work. It wasn't a fine. It wasn't draft picks. They said, no, you guys are gone. The GM gone. The manager gone. This guy gone. You got to get out of the game. You can't have that. So now after a year, after he's done it with one team that we know of and another team that I think we're all pretty certain about, is that, well, we'll just bring him back. I don't see how you can. Yes, if all that matters, if the only thing that matters is winning, okay, bring him back.
Yeah.
But you have to ask yourself, is it going to last this time or is he going to get caught doing something else? This team has been up against it a couple of times, whether it's the Apple Watch thing or whether it's hiring a manager after they probably knew what he was doing down in Houston. And then he started doing something else with the Red Sox. Oh, wait, that wasn't him.
Oh,
that was
that
a
here.
Rogue employee running the coax cable from monitors to the cameras and all that stuff.
Give me a break. Rogue employee. Let me give you another name here.
And again, this isn't like an anti-Cora thing. No. I'm not saying he's, you know, he's an awful person who should be banned for life. Just not here. You did that here.
Hey.
You had to get rid of him. Why are you bringing him back now? What's changed?
And prior to his first day managing here and knowing what he did and how they succeeded down in Houston, going to Boston knowing, hey, I played there. Okay, I know that ballpark inside out. I know that wall. I mean, they got cameras hitting everywhere. We could put a hole. Nobody would know in that deep center field. Like, don't tell me that, like, he wasn't licking his chops to get back here and to have some sort of backdoor to do that.
You want some regular season batting averages from the Astros in 2017 until now?
We did this, didn't we?
No, we haven't done this one. This is an updated one.
Okay. This one compares what they did 3 years ago to what they're doing right now.
The 2020 regular season, how they did this season versus 3 years ago. Now, that's not always fair anyway. You're 3 years older. But for Jose Altuve, it went from .346 in 2017.
That's decent. That's good.
He batted .219 this year.
That's not as good.
Carlos Correa, .315 back in 17. Pretty good.
That's pretty good.
.264 this year.
Not as good.
Josh Reddick, .314 back in 17.
All these guys are over 300. That's great. What do you do this year?
.245.
Oh, no. That's not as good.
Do you notice a trend here? How about Yuli Gurriel, who was at .299 back in 17?
Almost 300.
Yeah, just a hair under .232 this year. Alex Bregman, that little pest.
Prick.
.284 back in 17.
Oof.
Not bad. .242 this year.
Well, your pandemic is distraction.
George Springer went from .283 3 years ago to .265 this year. The highest batting average I just named was that one, Springer, at .265. And to tell you the other ones, again, these are the core players of the Astros this year. What they batted, .219, .264, .245, .232, .242, .265. That's interesting to me.
Did we all agree that
interesting?
And when I say all, I mean everybody. Every fan, every analyst, every talk show host, every writer, did we all agree that the Red Sox had to fire Cora before anything else came out, before they even did the investigation, and that they were right to do so?
Yes.
Okay.
People of a sane mind felt that way.
Right? Okay. What's changed?
I can't tell you.
Other than time?
I don't know. I can't give you a good answer.
Has it been a ton of time?
There is a segment of Red Sox fans who believe...
How long has it been? A couple of years since that happened?
There are a segment of fans that believe somehow that Alex Cora has been scapegoated in Houston and that he really wasn't the mastermind behind it.
Okay, based on what? And by the way, how much time has elapsed since the Red Sox fired him? Has it been a couple of years? I kind of forget.
I know.
What? Oh, has it been a matter of months?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you bring him back?
Well,
what are you talking? What is Buster Olney talking about? They'd be stupid not to. How can you? Nothing's changed.
Been 9 months. You're fired.
When Alex was here, when Alex got brought was brought here to manage this baseball team, was that baseball team stacked? They're pretty loaded, right? Good team.
Yeah.
Team stripped down right now. Now you're going to have him come back, and all of a sudden he's supposed to be the savior? Isn't this more on selection of players and a GM and Heim Bloom and, you know, their collaborative efforts over there at Fenway Park? to build a baseball team? Like, it doesn't seem like Coors part of that. It feels like it's more of, and didn't I say this yesterday, that man, that ownership is allowing him and his baseball people to pick the next guy?
That is true. That was said yesterday, that ownership will not pick. It will be Bloom and Company, to which I say, bye-bye, Alex Cora.
Like, that's the door on Cora.
Because I don't think that's going to be the guy. I don't think that's going to be Bloom's guy.
I just feel it's that way based on the tone and how Bloom spoke this week on Cora.
Based on Bloom's background, don't you believe that he believes that you can find a player, you can find value elsewhere, you can find, you know what I mean?
It's Belichickian.
Sort like, of that attitude. Yeah,
we'll get any guard or center.
We'll make it work.
I bet
he feels the same way about manager the way he does about players, which is, I don't need that headache. I don't need that guy back in here. I can find another manager just as good as him.
Plus, don't you think he's going to get a lot of, hey, well, we did it this way 2 years ago with Alex coming in knocking on his door.
I got to give you another name.
Okay.
Has nothing to do with UMass, as you suggested.
Damn it.
Not at all. It does have something to do with the 1990s Red Sox, though.
Oh.
I'll give you another managerial candidate, courtesy of John Tomasi. I'll tell you who it is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sports Hub. The former QB, always laser-focused.
It's like going to bed at night, bringing a rattlesnake in your room. Let him sleep on a hot spot, on a hot rock.
And the guy who was always by his side.
The Lakers, UFOs, mayonnaise, all in the mix here.
Zolak and Bertrand.
If that makes any sense.
No.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
This city wants something bad. I know what we want. You guys know what we want. You know what you want here. It's called a championship. That's what you want. That satisfies a lot of problems.
Either of you guys know who that is?
Sounds like Jimmy Williams to me.
Good job, Zoe.
Pigs fly. How high can they fly?
Give it. What do we have in there, though? We have anything else from him? Any other Jimmy lines?
Yeah, I know if a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his booty, but...
If a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his booty.
I hear stuff. I remember stuff.
Oh, God. Here's the latest name for you to add to the list of managerial candidates.
Jimmy Williams?
Brady Williams, son of Jimmy Williams. His multiple ties to the Red Sox. Tomasi writes that in addition to spending 3 years in the farm system after being drafted in the 45th round in 1999, he's also the son of ex-Boston skipper Jimmy Williams. He's made a name for himself as a minor league manager. The 40-year-old has spent the last 2 years with the Durham Bulls.
Huh.
The Durham Bulls are now Tampa's AAA affiliate, which means he has a prior relationship with Chaim Bloom.
It's called a championship. That's what you want.
Oh, if he's anything like his dad, sign me up. Sign me up for that all day long. Brady Williams.
You know, I know if a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his booty, but...
That press conference was an all-timer. An all-timer. I hope it happens. I can only hope he gets an interview. He's obviously probably a long shot, but you can't tell me that would be fun.
Tomasi.
Put him on the list! Put him on the damn list! Brady Williams! Get Brady Williams here! Oh, I'm so glad you remembered that right away, Zo.
Yeah.
Jimmy.
Four years from now, you're going to have Brady Williams and Steve Belichick as the head coaches?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Does Pete Carroll have any kids?
Yeah.
Does he have a son?
Yeah.
Does he want to coach?
Good point.
Does he want to coach?
He coaches for him. He coaches on the Seattle staff.
Oh, he does? I don't think I knew that.
Son played at Pitt, and then after he graduated from Pitt, he followed Pete around everywhere as an assistant.
Why is that not made a bigger story?
Oh, it is. Does he have two sons as well on that staff?
Yeah. He's got,
no kidding.
He's got multiple sons, yeah.
Oh, I had no idea that was the case there.
Yeah.
John Gruden had his son as the strength coach.
Yeah, that I knew.
Doesn't Andy Reid have a son on the staff, too? Zimmer's kid was the staff, and then he left Zimmer, but he was on the staff with Zimmer at first.
All the Kubiak's kid, all the Shula
Rex Ryan's kid is in the league now.
The Shanahan's.
Shanahan, Shula's kid, yep.
All right. Well, sign us up for that. Pete Carroll's kid and Jimmy Williams' kid, and they'll coach the teams. And it will be the late 90s all over again. Hey, just remember, Jim, Jimmy Williams was right pitching Pete Shurik in that game.
Yeah, I know if a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his booty.
How would you bump your booty if you're a frog and you had wings?
That's a Raising Arizona reference right there. If a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his ass a-hopping.
Yeah, think about that. Like the frog.
Just remember how Jimmy used to like come up those steps.
The booty's down here.
Like, he used to come up the dugout steps and be like, all right. Just sort of trotting.
He's one of the guys that always look goofy in a uniform. Like some of these managers just look terrible in a uniform. Like let him wear like a sweatshirt or something.
Jimmy with one M.
Yes.
Jimmy.
Why that is, Jimmy. I don't know.
Jimmy.
I bet Maz has a few Jimmy Williams stories
don't
for you.
Somebody.
I'm sure he does. Then put him on the list.
You probably saw little Brady Williams walking around the clubhouse in the 90s.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but what year? He was born in 79, so by the late 90s.
He was 20.
Yeah, he got drafted at the age of 20 by the Red Sox.
Walking around with grown men naked? Walking two and four?
Isn't that kind of weird?
Where's he been?
Where has he been?
Hey, Estelle was supposed to call in, too. Wasn't she that old lady?
Looking for you, right?
She didn't know me or know anything of me. Or
that's a little. That's a little hard for me to understand because if you watch Felger Maz every single day
on TV,
you've never once. I mean, listen. I don't know. Maybe
old people have habits, baby.
The programs are on.
What are the programs on? What particular soap operas are on?
Days of Our Lives.
Matlock. Murder, She Wrote.
Yep. Below Deck.
I don't know if she's watching Below Deck.
That's the
Golden
thing.
Girls.
Are the old people shows of 20 years ago or 25 or more years ago, are those still in syndication and in reruns so that now this generation of old people are still watching?
See, the problem is
Golden Girls?
What is that? What is the new old people show?
Yes.
I mean, I'm using old people shows from 20 years ago, Beetle. Old people 20 years ago watched Matlock.
But we all do. We all just name Murder, She Wrote
and
Golden Girls. And
like, I always defer to Jim.
The final episode, the final new episode of Golden Girls was produced in May of 1992. That's over 28 years ago.
What about Bar Rescue?
What are the
you think
olds?
That's an old person show?
What are the old people watching
Seinfeld.
Now? Other than this show.
No, not even Seinfeld.
Friends.
Cheers.
I got to be honest. I think we have a good deal of the senior citizen population watching us every day.
Lawrence Welk.
We should find out what are your programs? What stories are you looking at?
Right. That's
a good point.
A lot of those shows are on like the over-the-air -2-3 channels.
Yeah. See,
all day long. If you look at the over-the-air TV, -2-me TV.
Which Jim has, of course.
You couldn't bug my
up on the roof.
You couldn't bug my grandfather in his 80s when he had Hogan's Heroes, All in the Family.
How about MASH?
MASH. And I think it was Golden Girls. My grandma's like, she has to get hers and watch Golden Girls. And come and knock on my door.
Three's Company.
That one. Yep, The Ropers.
Yeah, what are those shows now?
There are none. You can't even make them now. Can't have a sitcom now. There is none. Blame Netflix. Thanks a lot, Netflix.
I just remember MASH running on a near loop on TV 38.
Ever go back and watch MASH now?
I can't.
I can't say I have.
Because it's filmed in one singular tent.
And I looked at, I mean, I...
Hardy, didn't you look up like the overhead of what it took to produce that show and cost? And what that show made over the years. I thought you did that once.
No,
no, we did bring that up on the show.
We did.
Once.
We did.
Yeah, we did have
like
a conversation
deep dive
about it.
On MASH production costs.
Yes, $13,000 to put it on air.
It was the day that we brought up the song, the MASH theme.
Oh,
remember
Suicide is Painless.
Suicide is Painless. And how a kid wrote it and got ridiculous royalties from it.
Yeah.
And got rich off the one song.
Yeah.
That's I remember amazing. Talking about that, but I don't remember about the production costs.
Yeah, they shot it in one tent. Like, that was... That was it. One scene.
It was just odd that they had the laugh track going for something that obviously wasn't filmed in front of a studio audience.
Yeah, but, you know.
I mean, you're supposed to be, you know, in Korea.
So,
I mean,
T-Bone thinks it's Seinfeld, though. Seinfeld?
No. You can't even find Seinfeld on it.
I know.
An old person cannot turn a TV on right now. They can barely know.
Seinfeld isn't rerunning it like that. It's not rerunning like it used to.
Where's an old person going
to
find that?
It's too expensive to rerun like it used to, but you can still find it on TBS.
What, do you think an old person's going to stream it or go on like one of these streaming sites? Peacock?
All right.
Or
I didn't. Okay. We're just spitballing here.
Hold on. My grandfather had teeth and a bull neck. What the hell's Hulu?
We're going to pick this up in the 1 o'clock hour because I see some calls coming.
Old people. Call us. What do you look at on the TV set?
Hang on. We got to talk to the Celtics head coach.
Brad Stevens, head coach of the Celtics, next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Got an itch for sports talk while you work?
So just dropped his phone down his shirt.
You want to know why? He was using it to scratch his back.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand at 12:51 here on this Wednesday. We go to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. And welcome in the head coach of the Boston Celtics, Brad Stevens, joins us now. Hi, Brad.
Hi, guys.
Hey, coach. Really appreciate you doing this closeout interview with us. You know, sometimes when the season ends abruptly and not the way you wanted it to, it's easy not to do it, but we do appreciate it. And, you know, looking back on his series with Miami, as I'm sure you've racked it through your head a million times, is there anything you would have done differently? And it's not a specific game or a rotation. Is there anything you wish, boy, I didn't leave that one, you know, in my back pocket that maybe I could have done this?
Yeah, I think it goes back to just the individual games. And obviously you always scrutinize each individual game, especially the losses, with even a finer tooth comb. And, you know, I'd say that in every game you ever coach, you know, there's going to be moments where you wish you would have done one small thing different. And I'd say that would be more the case in the individual games as far as like trying things or being things that, you know, we didn't try. I would say that we tried quite a bit. They were obviously better late. In every game, they were extremely tied together. They were the best team we played, I thought, by quite a margin, because defensively they were very good and had options. And then offensively, I thought, you know, that the difference between them and other teams we had played was their ability to score really in three ways. They could score off all the cutting and motion, which was very difficult for everybody to stop throughout the seeding games and the playoffs. I thought we did a reasonable job guarding most of that stuff. I thought our pick and roll defense got better throughout the series. It was porous early and then it got better. And then the third way, which a lot of playoff basketball becomes, is they could pick on matchups, and they tried to do that obviously quite a bit. And they did a good job of different guys at different times being able to take advantage of that. And, you know, there was a lot to improve upon in that series as a team. I certainly go back and look at all the different games. And again, especially the losses, especially the ones that go right down to the wire and say, what could I have done different from a strategy standpoint, a tactic standpoint, substitution pattern, whatever the case may be. But I thought that, you know, Miami deserved to move on. Miami was a better team. And, you know, disappointed certainly in the result, not disappointed in the input from our guys. I thought what they gave, you know, all year was incredible. And, you know, we're disappointed to not still be playing, but certainly, you know, our guys gave it all they had.
You mentioned Miami staying together late in games. Offensively, why did it seem that your team got away from playing team basketball? And do you feel like there were too many threes taken late in some of these games, especially game six?
Game six, I thought, obviously, they stayed in that zone, which we played really well against the last maybe five halves of basketball prior to the very end of that game. And, you know, sometimes that's what you get. And we did get a few that were like drive and kick, inside out, ball touch the paint, you know, those step-in threes that are great shots, obviously, with Adebayo in the middle of that thing, the way that you were going to get layups was to engage him in some level and then be able to drop it to cutters. We missed a few opportunities at the rim. But we also missed some open shots. I think the early part of the series, game one, when you go back to it, I think our issue was we were just a little too stagnant. And I thought we got better, and we really attacked their man well, and it's why they went zone quite a bit. And then, you know, the last, again, five halves, we felt good about our attack. But each game, each ending of that series was its own, you know, was a myriad of issues. I thought that there were a couple of times in the series where the turnovers were the biggest factor at the very end of the game, because it not only didn't get us points, but it led to points at the other end of the floor. So there are a myriad of things. There's no question we need to finish better than we did. And it was an interesting year because we started off the year in the first couple months really good at it. And then we went through a little bit of a spell there in March where we didn't finish well. And then it certainly bit us in this series.
When we spoke with you earlier in the postseason, we mentioned clutch, and you said, well, maybe a better word for that is will. Like, can a team impose its will throughout a game or series? Do you feel Miami did a better job of that? Was that a factor? And if so, how do you improve on that with a team with the same guys next season?
Well, I think one of the things, you know, the want to was certainly there, the desire to, we had some errors, obviously, that were, you know, some forced by Miami on great defensive plays, some unforced that led to those easy baskets. So you're imposing your will with your activity defensively. And then I think the other way that they did that was, again, I thought that they, in certain times, certainly use their physical strength to get to places. You saw that with Adebayo in game six. You saw that on several occasions with Butler. Dragic had his moments. And, you know, that's a credit to them. You know, there's things that there's individual areas that we can improve on. There's no question about that. And there's collective areas that we can improve on. But again, I don't think that was a 1-2 issue. I think that was a, you know, we have to credit them for being better in those moments on both ends of the floor. And again, they deserve that. You know, I think that they're a heck of a team. They're the best team we played in the bubble, not close. And it's, you know, it'll be a heck of a series here in the finals.
How do you feel about Marcus Smart taking more shots in game six in an elimination game than Jaylen Brown or Kemba Walker?
One of the things about that, the way that they were playing us, was a lot of attention at the top of the zones or even on the catch for certain guys was going to be more than others. And so I thought our guys made the right pass and the right play a lot. You saw Marcus hit those shots early in the game. And then I thought his best looks came in, you know, in the third quarter. I thought he had a couple of wide open ones in the corner that are, you know, he shoots a high percentage on. So I don't look at necessarily quantity of shots taken by each individual. I look at the quality of shots generated by our team. And there are certainly some throughout the game by our team that we could have gotten better looks. But I'd also think we attacked a lot of what they were trying to do well. We scored 113 points in that game and didn't convert much at the end. The deal is that the other end of the floor, you know, I thought they really took advantage of us in several instances.
Okay, so we've talked to you about this bubble since you guys have been in it, and you mentioned the amount of time everybody spends together and how much we like being around each other. Some teams, I think, maybe adapted to the bubble. You might think this is a stupid question, but played better in the bubble because it's the same court every time, and especially like young guys on Miami's team. And I know you got young guys too, but don't you wish that like at times, man, like we could play this game, game four, six, in the Garden in front of our crowd to where it could be intimidating for a team, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, there's no question we'd all prefer to play on home courts and in road courts. Like those are like, it's part of why you play. That's part of the fun. You know, I thought Miami played great in the bubble. I thought we played great. Like we had if you would have told me however long the season started a year ago that we were going to give ourselves a chance to play in the Eastern Conference Finals after beating Philly and Toronto heading into the year, I would have said, that's terrific. But when it, you know, when it gets down to it and you get in the middle of it, you always want more. And we all feel that way. But I thought that our guys really played, you know, great and did a lot of good things. We had some issues. We have some things we've got to clean up. We've got some things we've got to improve upon. But there's a lot of reason for us to be optimistic about being able to do that, which is good. I thought playing down a body for the better part of the first two series with Gordon out, and then even him coming back and obviously, you know, not 100%. I thought that the way that our other guys handled that was really impressive. And, you know, to go through it with them, to be there for as long as we were there, you know, I don't have anything but praise for the amount of time, input, and energy they put in to being the best that they could be. And I was telling my wife yesterday, like our training staff, our security guard that was there with us, our coaching staff, the different support staff we had. I mean, the amount, they worked 84 straight days. And they did it in a really unique, unusual situation. And I just am so thankful that all those people put in that much to give us a chance. And we came up short. And, you know, we recognize we came up short and we're accountable for coming up short. But I appreciate the effort that those people all put forth for us.
You mentioned sort of the will and desire and effort of your team this entire situation through the course of the bubble and in the playoff series. In this series, do you think there was maybe a physical toll that it took on your players by the end? Defensively, statistically, game six was not good. Was that part of maybe getting worn out?
I don't ever want to use excuses like that. I mean, I just think it is what it is. You have to credit the other team for being able to operate in those circumstances, you know, physically. And there are certainly some throughout the game by our team that we could have gotten better looks. But I also think we attacked a lot of what they were trying to do well. We scored 113 points in that game and didn't convert much at the end. The deal is that the other end of the floor, you know, I thought they really took advantage of us in several instances.
Okay, so we've talked to you about this bubble since you guys have been in it, and you mentioned the amount of time everybody spends together and how much we like being around each other. Some teams, I think, maybe adapted to the bubble. You might think this is a stupid question, but played better in the bubble because it's the same court every time, and especially like young guys on Miami's team. And I know you got young guys too, but don't you wish that like at times, man, like we could play this game, game four, six, in the Garden in front of our crowd to where it could be intimidating for a team, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, there's no question we'd all prefer to play on home courts and in road courts. Like those are like, it's part of why you play. That's part of the fun. You know, I thought Miami played great in the bubble. I thought we played great. Like if you would have told me however long the season started a year ago that we were going to give ourselves a chance to play in the Eastern Conference Finals after beating Philly and Toronto heading into the year, I would have said, that's terrific. But when it, you know, when it gets down to it and you get in the middle of it, you always want more. And we all feel that way. But I thought that our guys really played, you know, great and did a lot of good things. We had some issues. We have some things we've got to clean up. We've got some things we've got to improve upon. but there's a lot of reason for us to be optimistic about being able to do that, which is good. I thought playing down a body for the better part of the first two series with Gordon out, and then even him coming back and obviously, you know, not 100%, I thought that the way that our other guys handled that was really impressive. And, you know, to go through it with them, to be there for as long as we were there, you know, I don't have anything but praise for the amount of time, input, and energy they put in to being the best that they could be. And I was telling my wife yesterday, like our training staff, our security guard that was there with us, our coaching staff, the different support staff we had. I mean, the amount, they worked 84 straight days. And they did it in a really unique, unusual situation. And I just am so thankful that all those people put in that much to give us a chance. And we came up short. And, you know, we recognize we came up short and we're accountable for coming up short. But I appreciate the effort that those people all put forth for us.
You mentioned sort of the will and desire and effort of your team this entire situation through the course of the bubble and in the playoff series. In this series, do you think there was maybe a physical toll that it took on your players by the end? Defensively, statistically, Game 6 was not good. Was that part of maybe getting worn out?
Yeah. I don't ever want to use excuses like that. I mean, I just think it is what it is. You have to credit the other team for being able to operate in those circumstances, you know, physically and get to where they wanted to go. I mean, a lot of those shots that they got are right at the rim or, you know, you're then, you know, they put you in a bind because of the two shooters are ridiculous. And when I say ridiculous, those are two of the best shooters in the NBA. And then all those other guys get to the basket and one opens up the other. And then all of a sudden you're in a real bind. For the most part, we had guarded well, at times in the early part of the series, but I did think for whatever reason, they really got to where they wanted to go, and were able to put us in a tough spot.
Okay. Go ahead, Hardy. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh,
you got something there, Hardy?
No.
Oh, okay. I
have a fun question. Can I have a fun question with you, real quick here? What kind
are
of bed?
Allowed to do that?
Yeah, these are all fun.
No,
what are you talking about?
He's like waiting for the humdinger to come right now. Like, did you have to bring in a special bed for Taco down there? Like, I think they had
extended beds for all the guys, but I'm sure Taco gets an extra extension. I don't know how how it fits in the room, but
shower.
The resort was really nice. You take your family down there and you go down there, you're going to have a great time. I'm not sure that you're going to want to stay there quite that long.
But, you're not going back, are you?
I probably won't be back anytime soon. But it was, you know, again, it was like there were challenges that came with it. It was, you know, it could be mentally taxing at times. But nobody ever showed that in the team setting. Nobody ever showed that. I go back to the staff. Like the assistants, no matter how much they were thinking about missing their families and everything else, they never showed it. They always brought everything they had. The energy was incredible. And I think getting together on the court, getting together in the meeting room was like the time where we all felt galvanized. It was the time where, like, this is what we're here to help each other have fun doing and try to be the best we could be. It's tough anytime you come up short, when you put yourself in position to have a chance. But again, the amount of improvement I'm encouraged by, and there are things we can get better at that we didn't do well in that series with time. And I think that we will have a huge emphasis on doing that.
Brad Stevens with us here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, WBZ FM HD1 Boston. Brad, I want to follow up on that. You haven't won a title yet, obviously, but you said there are things you can improve on and get better at for next year. Did you go into this playoff run, and do you believe going forward that this group of players is capable of winning an NBA title?
I think so much has to go right. I think so much has to, you know, bend your way. But at the same time, I'd say, so this is the third time that I've been to the Eastern Conference Finals. Pretty much three different groups, or, you know, there's some similarities, but, you know, I think obviously Jalen's been here for all of them. Smart's been here for all of them. Their roles have expanded over that time. Tatum was here, but I think that this is a really good group. And I think it's from what was accomplished to where we can go and where we can grow, I feel like this group has a chance to be special. And I think that that's really exciting. And, you know, I'm really hopeful. And I think that a lot of that hope, and when you look at Jalen and Jason's in particular, those guys' improvement, I just looked at the first 17 games of the season and compared it to the 17 playoff games when things are ratcheted up. They improved in every statistical metric. And when you think about just that growth in 1 year's time, and where that obviously with their age and where we can build, I think that we've had a lot of guys do a lot of good things, and that's just a good example that let's get better at the things that we need to clean up, and let's see what we can get accomplished.
Do you need another big?
I'm not going to get into that stuff right now. I'll talk to you guys in a couple months about all that stuff. Okay. I think at the end of the day, first of all, we would not have been in the position we were in without that rotation of bigs all elevating themselves, and especially Tice. Like, I thought Tice, what he was able to do this year, I don't think anybody would have predicted going into the year. And to put that on those guys is not fair. I thought they gave us everything they had. And, you know, if you would have told Tice at the start of the year, you're starting and you're going to go through Embiid, Gasol, Ibaka, and then Adebayo, you're like, that's quite a task. And for him, I thought the way he elevated himself, the minutes Rob gave us, Cantor and spots, I thought was terrific when asked. And all of them had a tremendous mindset about being a part of a hockey substitution pattern, which in the NBA is not always easy to do. But that was the way that we were going to attack it. I think we can all improve within this building. And it'll be interesting to see how the roster shapes itself out. We'll see how that all goes. But everybody that was in this building added to it. We just came up short.
And it changes every year, which conference is sort of stacked. And I think it's like that way in all sports. But looking forward to next year, like all these teams.
It's going to be stacked.
The East is going to be stacked next year. It's going to be a beast, isn't it? Like, people are going to add.
It's stacked.
Yeah.
It's stacked. It's not enough to stay the same as far as it's not enough to expect that because you ended where you ended that you're going to be back there. It's not the case. You have to improve within the group. You have to improve, you know, from our coaching standpoint, we all have to improve. Everyone has to get better for us to have a chance to be back where we were and then hopefully move ahead.
All right, Coach. Well, we appreciate you checking in today. We appreciate the interview that we've been doing all season long.
Yeah.
As always. And hopefully we can do it again next year.
Enjoy your time at home.
Yeah, you guys be well.
All right, Coach. Thank you.
See ya.
Brad Stevens with us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
It's classy of him to do that.
Sure is.
Yeah.
It is. Cause I thought we talked about this on Sunday. Like, yeah, you think Stevens will do a follow-up.
You don't get season enders all that often.
You don't get season enders ever. We always have them scheduled down there. You know, when Patriots, when it ends,
well,
it ends.
Well, he's not obligated at all to do that. So
yeah. No, because like sometimes they just, we don't talk about elimination.
Many moons ago, Bill Belichick would go on the radio after losing.
Yes.
He would at the end of the year. And I don't think I've heard that recently.
Nope.
But 10, 15 years ago, that did happen. If we had had headlines, Hardy, who would they have been sponsored by?
Oh, I don't know. So back to, you want me to tell you, actually.
Say someone.
Yes.
Town Fair Tire, the best price, the best selection. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
I was there last week.
You were just telling me about that.
Nobody.
Yeah, I had to get that flat repaired.
Well, that wasn't a flat. See, that's the problem. Like, Town Fair Tire, to me, it's like BJ's. You go in there and, like, you smell the rubber, right? And it's like, I could just sit in here. You want to come back and pick your car up? No, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to sit here.
I'll walk around this room.
Watch that TV you got. I'm going to go look at all those nice rims, those 22s you have
over there. I did.
Do you have any spinners?
So I did. They don't do spinners anymore. No one has those anymore. God. Do they?
Chris Candy was the last guy that had spinners, I knew.
I'm going to sit here and watch Divorce Court.
Yep.
Have
some good coffee
which
that you guys got.
Brings us back to what are the shows for old people in the middle of the day. And Colin in Boston held on through the Brad Stevens interview. Colin.
What do you got?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great interview. So I just wanted to list off a few shows that I've watched with grandparents growing up. I got The Price is Right.
Yep.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yuck.
The King of Queens.
Yuck.
Let's Make a Deal.
Yes.
Law and Order. NCIS.
Yeah, these all sound like the ones.
Well.
Really, anything on the Buzzer Channel, if you have local, like an antenna on the back of your television, the Buzzer Channel is all game shows. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Right. My grandparents like the game shows. I like to gamble when like the wheel would spin on Price is Right. Come on, come on, come on, come on, 95. Ow. Over. Damn. Then you have to, how overpriced were those damn giveaways, though? Trip to Jamaica in a brand new car. Yeah, start that one about 17, 18 grand. No, a car itself's 23, dumbass.
Where are you staying, you know?
Right. What are you at, the Quinta?
Yeah, what are we flying?
What am I paying for breakfast? Is breakfast included?
Exactly. Mm. I feel like court shows.
Oh, Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. Yeah, absolutely.
Judge Judy's a big one.
Yeah, Brian in Nashville. Brian.
Hi.
Hi.
Good afternoon, guys. I wanted to make a comment about what my parents have been watching. But first, I wanted to make like a sports-relevant comment. What they haven't been watching, besides all those shows that you already mentioned, and when I was growing up, that was really important to watch, was actually the Red Sox. So I find that interesting that neither of them watch that anymore at all.
Mm, wow. Oh, that's a killer.
They're even losing that crowd.
Jesus.
Yikes.
The Jello crowd.
Stephen Malden. Steve.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something a little bit different. What the baby with Generation X would be considered older shows. I'll just rattle them off. Night Court, Welcome Back, Carter, MacGyver, Greatest American Hero, Moonlighting, Charles in Charge.
$6 Million Man.
You're just naming old shows. What are old people watching right now? What are they watching?
It's got to be Judge Judy.
If you walk into your grandparents' house right now, what's on TV?
Fox News.
I think it's news. I do. I swear to God.
It's a lot of news.
Whether you're MSNBC, whether you're CNN, whether you're Fox.
Is it Family Feud? Are they watching a lot of Family Feud?
I don't know
if they care for Steve Harvey. I think he might work a little too blue for them.
We have one overwhelming answer on Twitter.
What is it?
Responses. Just people. NCIS.
I don't even know what that is. What is that?
The Mark Harmon detective show. Right?
NCIS. All of them. Anything on ION TV.
Steve Harvey dresses like Cedric Maxwell. I noticed that. I've been watching those Family Feud videos on Facebook when I get bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ask a crazy question, you get the dumb answer, and he goes nuts. Like, look, he looks like Cedric Maxwell. Same suits, those long, high-button suits.
Our thanks again to Brad Stevens for joining us here on Zolak and Bertrand. If you missed any of the interview, it will be posted at 98.5thesportshub.com. Today's takeaways come up at 1:50. More of your calls are on the way next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.